Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It's baseball season here, but it's football season out in Owings Mills this week. We're going to be doing the Crab Cake Tour beginning on Friday, retaking it back out on the road. We'll be at Fadley's at Lexington Market. They are getting the new Fishmonger's Daughter open in Catonsville. I promise we're going to get over there before the spring is over with onto that beautiful second floor. Right next to State Fair, right across from El Guapo. It is opening soon. We'll find out more on Friday when we were down at Lexington Market. The San Francisco Giants are in town. Steve Miles is going to join us. Luke will be making his way to Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Friday. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I will have new Maryland Treasure scratch-offs to give away, including some a handful of my Harlem Globetrotters still left over from February and March. But we will have the fresh ones. And then next Thursday, we are at Costas in Timonium. And then on the 23rd, Thursday the 23rd, we'll be at Coco's Pub in Lauraville. And I can't wait to get back there and get a bowl of soup and some proper coconut shrimp and a Greek salad and all the things that I love. Spring has sprung, but not quite in Chicago where they're playing afternoon baseball the next couple of days, but certainly here in Baltimore as the weather picks up. Luke, I was stunned because you and I like to talk about whether Lamar comes to OTAs or not. And Chad Steele literally took my press pass, told me I didn't come to enough OTAs, if you can imagine what a liar he is. But nonetheless, I know you don't take the OTAs as seriously as I have. John Harbaugh had sent me texts back when he was, well, way back when he was the coach of the team, in regard to Lamar Jackson not coming to camp and to being around the building and being the $60 million player and the leader and all of that. But so far, Jesse Minter and Eric DaCosta have a Lamar out so much so that when I looked up on televisions on Monday night, I was at a Cooper's Pub in Timonium. I looked up every television had talking heads. It must be slow in the NFL right now. The Mendoza thing must be slow that the Lamar Jackson showing up in Owings Mills for the first days of the Jesse Minter administration. It means something to somebody.
Where's the Super Bowl being played this year? Right? I mean, get everything ready, right? It's decided. No, I look, you and I've talked so much this time of year about OTAs, whether it's Lamar or other players in the past. And as I've always tried to put it, I think there's nuance here. No, OTAs, especially this point in the offseason program, I don't think is the end all be all. I mean, I can flat out read to you the description. The first couple of weeks, I mean, they're lifting weights, they're doing conditioning on the field, there's some meeting time, but I mean, they're not even, they're not putting on helmets or anything like that,
Getting
right?
to know
So,
you, right? Yeah.
but on the flip side, I've never said that they're utterly meaningless to the degree that everyone's wasting their time being out there, right? There's some middle ground here. I think the biggest thing for me, and the idea that Lamar was there for the first day, great, right? Because if there was one lingering question for me, it was not, well, the first day means he's going to be there every day the rest of the spring, right? Because that's not the case either for Lamar or any veteran player. I mean, Derrick Henry was there, Mark Andrews was there. So we know veteran players sometimes are in and out of the spring program because it's voluntary and there's,
But there's also the $750,000 that they offered him to show up and he
Well,
didn't. So
but
it's not even
he
about
hasn't cared.
money.
He hasn't cared about that the last couple of years. But if there was one lingering question for me, and it was going to be not evident, but you'd start to wonder if he hadn't been there Monday, if he hadn't shown up for the start. And again, we'll see what the attendance is like, and we won't even know entirely, right? I mean, we're still a long way out. I mean, the Ravens don't start actual OTAs when they can be on the field as a full team, even on a voluntary basis, until May 18th. Now, they do have a voluntary mini camp, which this is part of having a new football coach. I mean, they started their program Monday. They were the first team in the NFL to start their offseason workout program.
Well, that's why it was news, because they're the only ones that were like doing
Sure.
it, right?
But my point is, we're still more than a month away from the OTAs, which to me, that's where you really start to get
Well, you
into
throw the
some
football.
meat, right? Some meat to what you're doing. But for what I was interested in seeing was understanding the Ravens and Lamar did not get a contract extension done before the start of free agency. Steve Bisciotti had talked about, and Eric DaCosta had talked about them wanting that, right? They ended up doing a simple restructure. My lingering question, much more so than whether Lamar was going to show up for OTAs and all that, because I think at the end of the day, he's going to be there. He was there when, you know, when Todd Monken was a new coordinator, when they've had changes such as that, he tends to be there, right? And whether it's 100% or most of the time, he's been there. You know, when it's been a little bit less, it's either been a question about a contract, which we're going back 4 or 5 years ago now with that, or if it's a case where you've had the same coordinator, same quarterback coach, like he had the last couple springs. So for me, I was just wondering, was there any sense of hard feelings or any sense of delivering a message to the organization in the aftermath of not them not getting a contract extension done in March, right? So the idea that he was there on the first day, not just a good sign for Jesse Minter and Declan Doyle, but also a good sign for the organization that regardless of where things might stand with him from a contractual standpoint in terms of wanting to get an extension done, look, they can still get an extension done this spring or summer, right? It's not, there's nothing prohibiting that other than just the two sides needing to come to an agreement, right? There's no mechanism in place that just because they restructured his deal now that they can't extend him. In fact, they have cap space kind of baked in right now that I think is there in case they do extend him now, that they can actually raise his cap number now, so it looks better for next year and moving forward, right? So that's part of the
But he's
thinking with
only
that.
got this year and next year. Let's get the
Sure,
contract right, right?
of
Okay.
course, of course. But my point again, the fact that he showed up Monday, he was there taking part, that to me was a good sign that for whatever reason they didn't get the extension done in March like that the organization had hoped,
He's not disgruntled.
there's not bad
Yes.
feeling, right? And
Right.
that to me was the biggest takeaway. Again, we'll see. I mean, they have the first couple weeks, and then like I said, they do have a voluntary mini camp for veterans. That's something that they normally don't have. But teams that have a new head coach, you can do that. The New York Giants will have that, for example, with John Harbaugh. So, you know, Buffalo will have that right around the same time. So you have a mini camp before the draft. You have your draft. You have rookie camp then the weekend after the draft. And then OTAs will begin May 18th, right? And they can have 10 of those. And every 3 OTA days, one out of every three has to be open to the media. So, you know, we're not going to get a whole lot of as far as a glimpse of what's happening right now. They will have an availability later this week where we're talking to a few players. And, you know, I don't know if Lamar will be one of those. I'm guessing probably not, but maybe he will be. I haven't heard officially one way or the other. And we'll get to hear from the strength coach. So, you know, early on, this is a big day for Jesse Minter and the assistant coaches, but those guys aren't allowed to do any on-field work with players just yet. So it's lifting, it's running. I mean, everyone saw the social media videos of, you know, whether it was Derrick Henry or Lamar running around. I mean, seemed like they had pretty good attendance. I mean, gathering, you know, just looking at the clips and some of what they sent out to the media, you know, there was, you know, Lamar was there, Derrick Henry was there, Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers was there. I mean, it was mostly everyone that you know, from a veteran standpoint, Trey Hendrickson was there.
I saw Roquan Smith.
Yeah, Roquan Smith was there. I don't know if I said Marlon Humphrey or not, Kyle Hamilton, Malachi Stark. So it was well attended. That was good to see, right? I mean, and we all understand, especially at least I understand this point in the offseason with it still being more workout driven. I don't need to see these guys here every single day of every single week, but you don't want the scenario where guys are showing up at mandatory minicamp and that's the first time you've laid eyes on them since January.
And they
That's
gained
genuine.
12 pounds or something.
Right. I mean, Michael Pierce, what was that, 7 years ago, I think it was, where they actually pulled him off the field during minicamp because he was, you know, not in a position where he was ready to practice in their minds. But you're just, you know, you want guys to at least show their face and be around and start to build some rapport with their new position coach or the head coach, the coordinator, whatever
Just
it
to see
might
how
be.
different the building
Yeah,
is when you walk
exactly.
through. There's
Yeah,
going to be different
exactly.
oxygen in there without John Harbaugh.
No question. I mean, and I think in most cases, that's why the players get that too. You know, they're feeling this out. I mean, most of these guys don't know who Jesse Minter is, you know, other than maybe having a phone call and a couple text messages with them. I mean, in many cases, these guys were meeting him for the first time this week. So, like in person. So There is some curiosity in
Max
terms of
Crosby's still waiting.
right. Although Max Crosby's not ready to
It has
practice yet
not been an
anyway.
untumultuous offseason. I mean, it really, from a general standpoint, I'm inking my dear Sashi letter as I'm getting going. And dude, it's real. I mean, we're 2 weeks and tomorrow away from a draft. Like, it's here.
It's definitely, I mean, business has picked up. I mean, obviously, I mean, free agency was just so strange just because of the Crosby thing hanging over everything. I mean, it still feels like we haven't given the proper oxygen to the fact that they signed Trey Hendrickson. I mean, like, that's a big deal. I mean, that's one of the, in terms of money given to an outside free agent, it's the biggest they've had, right? I mean, they pivoted from the biggest trade they ever made to the biggest outside free agent signing they've ever made in terms of dollars, right?
Well, and it also means they better get after the quarterback.
Sure, I mean, they
In
better.
whatever way, whatever Mike Green, whatever best laid plans, whatever Kyle Van Noy or Clowney they're going to wind up signing, because they'll wind up signing somebody
Sign
late that's a
someone like
veteran
that, you
guy.
would think,
Yeah,
yeah.
some Elvis Dumervil type, Ngakoue, whatever, that will happen, but. This defensive coach coming in, there better be pressure on the
Oh,
quarterback.
yeah.
And the Matabike thing looms as a huge mystery, but there have been sputs and starts with whether he
Yeah.
can perform or not. And by the way, John Harbaugh already has his first pissed off superstar in New York, huh? Sexy
Yeah.
Dexy says, nah, nah, nah,
Well,
nah.
I don't know how much of that was him or how much he hasn't been happy with his contract for a couple years now, from what I understand. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, I've already seen a few people speculating. It's like, hey, could John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta broker a deal there? But without knowing the reality of where Matabike is, it's really tough to look at that. I mean, they're on the hook for paying Matabike regardless, right? I mean, this year is guaranteed for him, whether he's going to be able to play or not. So you've already paid Travis Jones. Can you take on another big contract on your defensive line? I doubt it. And I'm guessing, even if it's not plain spite, I'm guessing John Harbaugh is probably not going to be in any kind of a, have any kind of an inclination to help the Baltimore Ravens get better. So I'm guessing, it was fun to talk about and we'll see. But yeah, I mean, the Matabike thing, they've just been so tight-lipped about it. We know he's working out. We've seen that on social media. I don't think that necessarily means he is playing, but
Means he wants to.
doesn't mean he's not playing either. So I think whenever you're talking about a neck, and I cited this example a couple weeks ago when we were talking about this. I mean, the part of the story for Zach Orr that we forget as far as his retirement was his attempt to go get cleared by another team. If you recall, it was May, I think it was June. I think it was, when it's probably right around when teams' off-season programs
Was
had
that
wrapped.
Jacksonville that it was going to let him play?
No, well, he coached in Jacksonville. I don't know. Ultimately, no one cleared him.
Right.
He may have visited a couple teams, but I think their medical teams looked at the imaging for his neck and came to the same conclusion. So, point is with that, and we just talked about this a lot with Max Crosby. We've talked about this with various Orioles players with physicals and things of that nature. It's not a pass fail, simple cut and dried pass fail proposition. In a lot of cases, there's a lot of gray area, but when you're talking about a neck, man, you have to have so much caution there and to really be sure. And look, could there be a scenario where Matabike is playing? Yeah. I mean, there have been guys that have had neck conditions and questions and things of that nature, and then they end up coming back and can play, and times where that has worked out fine. But we also know when you're talking about the neck, forget about football. I mean, that's mortality, that's quality of life. Your life could be in danger depending on the condition of your neck and the risk that you could be taking. I mean, these guys, we know that football's a major risk. I mean, we know that whether it's a traumatic acute injury, or whether you're talking about CTE and the various health challenges that players have, whether you're talking about knee replacements, hip replacements, all that. I mean, it's a brutal game. So when you're talking about a neck concern, a neck injury of some sort or a condition of some sort, man, you better solicit every opinion that matters out there before you make a decision one way or the other, whether You're the team that's going to clear a player, or the player who says, hey, I can play, but I also realize I'm taking some risk here. And even if the team that I'm with is okay with that risk as well, I need to think about that, right? As much as I love the game, I also want to be there for my family long term. So I understand it's been frustrating. Believe me, from a media standpoint, it's been frustrating that we've asked, starting with John Harbaugh back in what October it was, I guess, when we started asking these long-term questions about Matt Ibike, and whether it's been Harbaugh, whether it's been Bisciotti, whether it's been DaCosta, Sashi Brown, no one has given a definitive answer of much substance at all, and we haven't heard from Matt Ibike. He has social media. If he wanted to put something out there, he could. And he hasn't yet. So that's their prerogative. I understand that there is a sensitive nature to a neck injury that I can recognize and that we all should recognize. But
The mystery in the middle of the defense for our purposes and for
yeah,
drafting
it
purposes.
makes it really interesting. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. I'm guessing the Ravens have a pretty good idea of whether Nnamdi Matabike is going to play football this year or not. Whether they're ready to broadcast that or not is a different story. But I'm guessing, even if it's not 100% right now, I'm guessing they have, percentages. They have
They're either
probabilities.
hopeful or they're dismissive of it at this
Yeah,
point. And if they're
exactly.
dismissive of it, they're gonna
Then
prepare accordingly.
they need to go draft another defensive lineman, right? I mean, you kind of look at where they are right now. It's like, okay, they have Travis Jones. They brought back John Jenkins, right? I mean, they're in the position. I mean, it was interesting to see they had a free agent visit with DJ Reader, a while back. I mean, he's more of a nose tackle, but certainly someone who could make an impact. And whether that was a tell about Matt Ibike or not, I mean, they're not the same kind of player, but
What also speaks to Minter being a defensive genius and how he wants to play it and
sure.
how he's discussing it with Anthony Weaver to say, if this, then that they're scrimmaging all of that long
Course.
before they're scrimmaging who they're going to pick in the second or third round 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, and really, it's not you have to do that with every player to some degree, right? I mean, you have to go through the what ifs. Not to say that you're going to have a perfect answer for every scenario. Like, for example, if Lamar Jackson, heaven forbid, something happens to him, it's Tyler Huntley. I mean, there's not another Lamar Jackson you can go get, right? It's Tyler Huntley, or you go kick the tires on some veteran quarterback. But you have to go through some semblance of scenarios for every position group to say, okay, if this happens, what's the pivot? If this happens, what's the pivot? If this happens, what are we doing there? So you have to do that. And like I said, in most cases, you're dealing with hypotheticals. But in the case of Matt Ibike, right now, whether it's 100% or whether they know it's 0%, they're not broadcasting that. But you always have to have contingencies. I mean, as much as you can, right? Understanding that there's a salary cap and you're not going to have a great backup at every position. And, it's why some seasons just come down to the mercy of whether you're healthy or not. I mean, it really is. It sounds like excuse making, but you've heard me say it for years now. Next man up sounds great until you reach a certain threshold and it's no more than a t-shirt slogan because you just say, well, we've lost four corners. Did you really expect our number five or number six or number seven corner to be as good as a starter, right? I mean, it's why you do need to have depth, but it's why you need guys to stay healthy. It's why availability is such an important part of a skill set. And it's why, in the case of Matt Ibike, I mean, man, if they have him and you have him rushing from the inside, with Trey Hendrickson rushing from one edge, man, that's just going to open things up that much more for the Mike Greens and the Travis Joneses of this roster. So you hope, but until we hear anything definitive, and because it is a neck injury and not a knee or an ankle, even in the case of Ronnie Stanley years back, I think it's important to pump the brakes and still have a certain amount of sensitivity and just respect for the unknown when you're talking about an injury of that kind of nature.
He's Luke Jones. He's covering all things National Football League as we get up on the draft. By the way, I had a pal on, Dwayne Reeder, who is the Clemente Museum guy in Pittsburgh. And I heard Kevin Brown and Ben McDonald, Pete Alonso talking about going to the Clemente Museum. And I thought, hey, we probably have people going up to Pittsburgh for this NFL draft in 2 weeks from now. They're expecting 1 million people in Pittsburgh. 1 million people on that little island, 2 weeks from Thursday night and Friday, as the draft makes its way to Pittsburgh. So if you're heading up there, had a great conversation with the museum curator of all things Clemente, and it's a real legitimate. He's a great guy. He was a part of my day with Mike Tomlin 10 years ago when we did our Give a Spit tour up in Pittsburgh, and it's been a little while since I've had him on. So I did enjoy that a little bit, even though he brought up 71 and 79 a little bit more than I wanted him to. This NFL, by the way, Farnan and Durham are also doing all of our sports. If you are on the WNST text service, you know it's brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. There was a minor trade for the Orioles in the morning. I'm not assuming anything happens here with this 14th pick. I mean, you and I have not talked about the draft or the players or the needs, although the needs are pretty acute, right? Whether it's a left tackle, whether it's a center, whether it's another edge rusher, whether it's something in the middle of the defense. They've used secondary picks here several times, and it feels like that part where Wiggins and Stark should be coming into their own, and Kyle Hamilton's one of the best players on earth. And I don't know where they're going in this draft with this pick, but there's a lot of potential, right? I mean, there are four or five spots on their roster where you'd say, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I keep coming back to the O-line, though. I mean, I think, look, could they add another pass rusher? Sure. Could they add their left tackle of the future? Sure. Could they add another defensive lineman because of Madubuike's status? Sure. What's their starting offensive line right now?
Not good enough behind a $60 million quarterback and a Hall of Fame running back.
On the heels of a 2025 offensive line that wasn't good enough, right? So that's where I keep coming back to this thing and saying, look, we know the reality with best player available. It's best player available that fits a need. We understand that, right? So,
Well, there's no point they were going to give Linderbaum that money.
I mean, not 27 million a year, not 28 million a year, right? I mean, no one else was other than the Raiders, right? I mean, so, but that said, you still have to replace them. You know, I mean, just because that was the responsible move to make. And as I said, to me, the time when they lost Linderbaum, it was really last spring and summer. I mean, that was the time to get a deal done. When you're in that position and that kind of player, as I said it weeks before it happened, it ended up playing out in a very, very similar fashion to what happened with CJ Mosley 7 years ago. Same deal. They, all things being equal, they wanted him back. But if you don't get it done within the certain window, that player gets closer and closer to market, and all it takes is one team. And the New York Jets were the case with Mosley. Raiders were the case with Linderbaum, where they're willing to not just reset the market, they obliterate that market. You know, they blow that market up by 4 million. You know, in the case of Linderbaum, it was way more than that. But even in Mosley's case, I mean, he got 4 or 5 million more per year than the next highest paid inside linebacker. So, but you have to pivot. And right now, I mean, they don't have a starting caliber center on their roster right now. I mean, I Corey Bullock's a Maryland guy. Great. You know, he made the roster. He's the backup center last year. The fact that he wasn't ever given any consideration to play guard, considering how weak their guards were last year, tends to make me think he's probably
A backup.
at best, and maybe not even a good backup, right? So certainly not someone that you're going to pencil in there. So it's tough. And look, that doesn't mean they're drafting a center in the first round. I want to be clear about that. But you know, that's where I look at. I own, you know, Vega Ione from Penn State or Spencer Fanau from Utah, like O lineman, right? Whether it's
Well,
going to
this
be
is
a
one of those things with that 14. If they back up into 23 and get
and
another
they.
pick, that's kind of how they would take a center first, right?
I mean, that would be the scenario for a center. And you know, and I'll full disclosure, and this is one thing that I'm not a huge like dive into the nuts and bolts of the draft because baseball has become more of my focus over the last month, right? So, but the overall sentiment that you've heard about this draft is it's not necessarily a draft that has 15 franchise altering kind of players at the top of the board, right? The thought is, I don't know, there's eight, and I'm just, you know, I'm kind of making up a number. I don't know that for sure, but the sense you've gotten is picking 14th isn't necessarily that dramatically different from picking 23rd compared to 28th in this draft. So when you have that kind of scenario, yeah, if you're Eric DaCosta, you might say, hey, can we move back 8 spots and pick up an extra day three pick in the pro, early day three or very late day two pick in the process, and then get another quality player there that, qu another quality backup or another quality depth developmental piece. Is there that scenario? Sure. Problem is, if you feel that way about the draft class, chances are there are a lot of other teams feel that way, and that's when it's a little more difficult to trade back, because if you're trading back, someone has to come up, right? And if there's a perception that there aren't quite as many true difference makers early in the draft, then the thought is, well, we might just want to stay put with where we are rather than spending extra draft capital to move up 8 spots to get, player X. So, but they certainly have needs, and you kind of go through quarterback. All right, even if we want to talk about Lamar's contract status 2 years from now, they're certainly not taking a quarterback in the first round or the second round or anything like that. But, running back, well, Derrick Henry, he's signed through next year, but he's going to be another year older and more, he's going to be expensive next year. You're not going to take a running back in the first round, I wouldn't think. I mean, I certainly wouldn't endorse that kind of a decision, whether you love the Notre Dame back or not. But, that's a position you could think of. Tight end, they need another tight end. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they lost Kohler
I
and
think they're going to regret giving the money to Andrews instead of Likely. That's my gut is they felt like they needed a binky for Jay. I see Mark Andrews as a
declining.
declining player. Yeah, I mean,
I mean, the
and
numbers
I
bear
don't
that
know
out
if
the
I'm
last couple
wrong
of
about
years.
that or right about that, and has nothing to do with him not showing up on the podium after he dropped the ball 2 years
Yeah.
ago. Although I thought that's. I'm not a fan of Mark Andrews in a lot of ways, including having talked to him. But that being said, I don't know that I'm feeling 13 million in love for him. I think they could have been much more desperate to keep Linderbaum around and overpay him than to just sort of have got. And the Zay Flowers thing, where his value is going to be and how they're going to figure out how to maximize that and get him 108 touches this year, in this offense somehow, some way, that better happen. If they're going to be a good team this year, not what they were last year, not what got the coach fired, not Lamar's hurt or in or out or whatever, if they're going to be a good team this year, if they're going to win 12 or 13 games, I don't know where it's coming from, because I don't think it's coming from Roquan Smith. I don't think it's coming from Marlon Humphrey. I don't think it's coming from Ronnie Stanley. I don't think it's coming from Mark Andrews. And I'm wondering whether it's really going to come from Derrick Henry and Zay Flowers, too. I mean, I'm wondering where this productivity, it's not going to be Lamar running for 1,200 yards and, running 18 times a game anymore. That's over with. So it better be Lamar throwing the ball, and it better be these other pieces in regard to this. And I don't know. I'm not bullish on their team right now. I don't know anything about the coach. Coach could be the next coming of Bill Belichick for all I know. But right now, the Max Crosby thing, just how they're being run, how they treat people, just in a general sense, the smarmy president they have and this new moon guy that I keep hearing about, the moon, the moon, the moon, the moon guy. There's a moon guy there who apparently is become real friendly with everybody in the front office there who's been there 100 years. So, they've got some. When Bisciotti showed up, he was all full of piss and vinegar and turmoil and all that. Then he shows up for the press conference, but not a part of the press conference, doesn't want to speak to people. Just all of it, to me, they're 8-9 with a fired coach and a quarterback who's trying to prove himself again with all of this going on around him without. Marshall Yanda's not here. Stanley in his prime's not here. I'm not even sure that Derrick Henry in his prime is here. I know Zay Flowers is in his prime. He's the one guy I look at and say, all right, that guy's in his prime. How are you getting them the ball? How much are you getting them the ball? And, he is 5'9" with 150 pounds. When he gets tackled the wrong way in space, turns an ankle, you're going to lose him for 6 weeks if anything were to happen. And I don't know. They don't feel like the deep depth team they felt like to me 2 or 3 years ago when they felt like they were freight train because Roquan was there, Stanley was coming back, Derrick Henry was being imported into this. They don't scare me on paper. On this Lamar, yes. The rest of it, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm surprised to hear you down on Derrick Henry. I mean, Derrick Henry finished the season I mean, it was as good as anyone in the league at the in December,
I
even
keep
with that.
wondering how long that's going to go.
Well, I mean, I hear some of what you're saying. I
And that
think,
without an offensive line opening holes too.
I mean, really, for me, it comes down to the offensive line. I mean, everything else you mentioned, I'd push back on a lot of that. Like, I think Derrick Henry will have another good season. Zay Flowers has become, one of the more underrated wide receivers in the NFL at this point. Don't let the size fool you. He's their number one wide receiver.
Well, they are right now where they are with Linderbaum a year ago, which is
Sure.
if you're not going to sign him, then you're going to lose him. And if you're going to lose him, fair
Sure.
enough. I mean, they've had a hard time finding wide receivers around here, as you and I can attest over the last 2 decades.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I'm not going to sit here and say that I love, the prospects of having to pay Zay Flowers more than $30 million a year to keep him, which is what it's going to be. I don't necessarily love that, but at the same time, like, what's the alternative, right? I mean, I agree with your point about Andrews. If you recall, I wasn't enamored with that deal when I thought it was kind of bizarre, a
Was his
little weird. I mean,
timing,
like,
yeah.
weird at best. That said, is Isaiah likely going to become a star? We'll see about that too, right? I mean, but if you're asking me, all things being equal, which one did I want moving forward? I would have picked likely just because he's 4.5 years younger. So that is it. But everything else you mentioned, look, I think a lot of that, you can do that with every team in the league. You're going to find position groups that are, or that guy's older, or that guy needs to take the next step, right? You're going to find that around. And I'm talking about other contenders too. You can do the same thing. Buffalo right now has all kinds of positions of question right now. Kansas City, I mean, is Patrick Mahomes going to be ready for week one, let alone talking about everything else on their roster? But it comes down to, for me, I mean, first and foremost, Lamar's health. No matter what the rest of their rosters look like, when Lamar Jackson has been healthy, they've been a good football team. And in many cases, they've been a great football team, at least in the regular season. So is he healthy? And what's the biggest factor in keeping him healthy? The offensive line. That's the part of this team. That's the part of this
And they don't have a
roster right
plus
now.
player right now.
I mean,
Maybe Rosengarten, maybe on his best day.
I think
He's.
he has the highest floor at this point in time. I mean, look, Ronnie Stanley wasn't bad last year. Like, I don't want to make too much of that by any means, but he's another year older. Is he going to stay healthy as he continues to get older? Now, he has been healthier the last couple of years, and that's been a good sign. And that's a credit to him, and it's a credit to the organization, because I think they probably have done a lot of trial and error to kind of see, how do you need to work out? What does your workload need to be? How do you need to practice? When do you need to practice? How much do you need to practice? When you're talking about someone who, with that kind of history, especially with his ankle, there's a lot of management that goes on. And to their credit, they have found ways for him to be on the field the last couple of years, way more than he had been the previous years. But is that going to continue? So, point is, with Stanley, he's a year older, and that
How
injury
old is he?
history.
32?
Yeah,
I'm gonna look him up. Dude,
I'm
I'll
pretty
get the
sure.
right age
I
because
know
I.
his birthday was in March. Yeah, he's 32.
Okay.
Yeah. But, is he going to be the same guy, or is, even if he stays healthy, is that going to start to backtrack? Rosengarten has not become a Pro Bowl right tackle, but he's a rock solid starter. And you're hoping that Dwayne Ledford, their new offensive line coach, can get more out of him, right? I think a big part of that equation, I mean, it's going to have to be based on how they're presently constructed. Even if they go draft two linemen, you're still going to be talking about rookies, right? Even if it's a first and second round pick spent on their O-line, they're still going to be rookies. So they are putting a lot of stock into the offensive line coaching and developing these guys. And, they believed in Emory Jones when they drafted him last year. Last year was an incomplete for him because he missed the entire spring and summer. I don't think you can really judge him based on the little bit that he played. That said, I'm not ready to just hand him a starting job, no questions asked. But center is a complete, I mean, as big of a question mark as they've had this time of year going into a draft in recent years, right? I mean, that's what you're talking about right now. So doesn't mean they won't find one. I mean, they drafted Linderbaum and he was a day one starter and did the job for 4 years, no questions asked. You didn't have to worry about it. Well, they've got to worry about it now until they find their next guy. So they've brought in a couple of veterans, but To me, those guys are more likely to be an upgrade from Corey Bullock as the backup center than someone you practically expect to become your starting center. So that's everything else you mentioned, veteran players needing to hold on and, guys that are value concerns. If you're talking about what Roquan Smith's being paid compared to the production, same with Marlon Humphrey. Every team, even other contenders have questions like that. But where I'm really hesitant, and you've already seen it. I mean, there, some of the sports books in Vegas and everything, they had the Ravens right at the top in terms of over under for win total. I don't see that until I see their offensive line in a better state than what it looks like right now. That's the big one for me because it's so incredibly important to keeping number eight healthy. So it's hard for me to just say, oh, well, Tyler Linderbaum, well, they weren't going to pay him $27 million a year. Understood, but fiscal responsibility doesn't play center for you in week one. You know what I mean? Like, you still have to go replace him. So that's where I still look at the, and we haven't even mentioned it. Like, they bring back John Simpson and fine. Like, I'm fine with it, but 3 years ago, John Simpson was the weak link on their interior offensive line. Now, he's the anchor on paper, right? So I need to
That
see,
doesn't add up.
right? I need to see some serious work done with the O-line. And look, Dwayne Ledford, their new offensive line coach, has a great reputation. I think that was a great hire. I want to be clear about that. He still needs to have something to work with, right? You can't just give him, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, right? So there has to be a baseline of talent there that, okay, John Simpson at left guard, fine. I'll even sign off on Emory Jones being, you can even try to convince me that he's the favorite to play right guard, but you better have another really serious contender competing with him. Whether it's a veteran or another guard you draft
Well, you made a
on
heck of
day
a case
two.
for using their first pick on an offensive
I
lineman
mean, that's where
of some kind.
I just keep coming back to that. I mean,
Well, taking a guard at 14, I can't imagine, right?
I mean, you could, and this is where it's a little more interesting because you could always go the Jonathan Ogden approach, right? I mean, Jonathan Ogden was drafted fourth overall. The Ravens had Tony Jones, who was a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle at that spot. Now, they knew he wasn't going to be there long term, but what did they do? They played Ogden at guard for a year. Could there be a scenario like that with the idea of, Ronnie Stanley? I mean, I don't know if that guy's going to be available that you really feel that way about, but point is, man, you need to come out of this draft with, I assume, unless you're going to be trading for a center at this point in time, which I suppose is possible, especially draft weekend. We've seen a deal like, deals like that go down. The Ravens have made deals like that with, during the draft where they've traded for a veteran player. But, man, I just look at that interior right now. If they had to line up today, and your interior offensive line is John Simpson, Corey Bullock, or what, Pinder at center, and Emory Jones or Andrew Voorhees at right guard. I mean, that's not the Super Bowl favorite on paper to me. I mean, it's just not. No matter what the rest of the roster might look like. And it's not as though they don't have some other positions that they could really stand to improve. So, hey, the draft is. Hey, it's part of roster building, right? I mean, the 14th pick is a way better asset than they've normally had in the draft in recent years. So I don't want to dismiss the importance of that, but it also increases the importance of you've got to knock that pick out of the park, right? You can't draft someone 14th and then they're struggling to get on the field, right? I mean, that's you don't want that. That this is not a roster that's think of Nate Wiggins 2 years ago. Nate Wiggins didn't need to be a starter day one, even though he ended up playing a lot as a rookie. But this is not 2 years ago. They need that guy that's drafted 14th overall to come in and play and play and be a big part of what they do because they do have a couple more holes in their overall roster. When you look at the depth chart, they have a few more weaknesses than they normally do. And look, some of that's inevitable when you look at how expensive some of these guys have become. You look at the state of their, I'll kind of leave you with this. The top of their salary cap right now in terms of cap numbers, Lamar Jackson at $34 million. I mean, that's cap wise a bargain, even though obviously he's still getting cash and you still need to get something done long term. But Roquan Smith at 32.7 million. Now, that's not his salary, that's just his cap numbers. So keep in mind, that's not cash. But you have, so 32.7, Matabike's just under 30, and you don't know if he's playing this year or not. At least we don't publicly know that. Marlon Humphrey, 26.3. I mean, right there. I mean, we just named,
30% of your cap.
I mean, Lamar.
It's $90 million worth of players.
I mean, take Lamar out of that equation. Just Roquan Smith, Matt Ibike, and Marlon Humphrey.
$90 million.
Two guys that, you know, in the case of Marlon, had a bad year. Roquan wasn't bad last year, but I think we would agree has become more of a value concern relative to what his contract is. And Matt Ibike, it's a total unknown. Didn't play, you know, didn't play after week two last year, and you don't know if he's going to play. So that's a lot in terms of cap dollars invested in three players who, to varying degrees, are some kind of a question mark for you. I mean, I don't want to put Roquan in that category quite as much, but.
But there's no thought that Matt Ibike is coming back playing 17 games and going to be a Pro Bowler. There's certainly no thought that Marlon Humphrey has that in him at this point, right? So we are looking at, and Roquan, you know, I guess Roquan will play 17 games and be a plus player and whatever, but not a $30 million player or feel like that sort of impact. It hasn't trended that way the last 2 years, not even for a minute. I haven't seen him fly around on the field and say, whoa, you know, like shades of Ray. I haven't had any vibe about that. Just a solid player at this point who's going to go out and be a leader and play fine, but that's a lot of money.
I mean, it's a value concern. I mean, I'll push back on something you did say. If Matt Ibike is cleared, like I don't think like this isn't. I don't think this is like a degenerative, like, oh well, he's going to have to be a part-time player or anything like that. I think this is much more, what is the state of his neck and his spine and all of that?
If he gets to the field, you feel like he'll be an
If
impact
he gets to
player.
the field, I assume he's just, you know, he's either going to be cleared or not, right? I mean, Zach Orr. It's not like Zach Orr became an old man overnight when they discovered his congenital spine condition. That was more like, hey, like this is too high of a risk profile for you to play at all. Forget about like being an everyday player or anything like that. So I think it's more with Matt Ibike, it's more like that, more so than like how we viewed Ronnie Stanley with a chronic ankle injury that, you know, can he play 17 games? Remember, they rotated him with McCarrie a year or two there, even. But your point is well taken, and the point that we're making here is those are three of your four biggest cap numbers, and there's some question with each of them, right? Whether it's a question of whether he's going to play at all in Matt Ibike's case, in the case of Humphrey, can he bounce back? I mean, Marlon Humphrey was a Pro Bowl player 2 years ago, so can you get the guy that's closer to that to than what he was last year? If you can, then there's no problem with him making what he's making, right? But if he's like he was last year, then that's a major value problem. And in Roquan's case, I mean, I think you're looking at him. That's where I kind of look at the Jesse Minter effect. You're hoping Jesse Minter, fresh mind, great defensive mind, all of that, that there could be a little bit of a renaissance with a couple of these guys that are a little bit older. You're hoping. Doesn't mean it'll happen, but I think you're hoping for that. But yeah, you kind of look at this roster, and you know, we haven't even gotten into. You know, Trey Hendrickson only has a $15 million cap number, but cash value, we know he's one of the big contracts they have. Same with Hamilton. So, not that you're worried about those two guys, but the point is, this roster has become a little more top heavy over the last couple of years, just in terms of how big those cap numbers are. And to be clear, that's not a bad thing if those players are all playing at the level that you expect them to. But when you have a couple of those guys that have either gotten older or guys are hurt or, you know, they're just not quite that same guy, then that's when you look at that and say, man, you better draft well and you better find some diamonds in the rough in day three and all of that, because that's how your roster, you know, can't, that happened to Kansas City big time, right? I mean, you have some big contracts and then suddenly a couple guys get older and, you know, Chris Jones isn't the guy he was, or Kelsey. 2 years ago, Kelsey, not the guy he was. And suddenly you kind of look at it and say, oh, we're having to put a lot more on our quarterback now. And if Lamar's healthy, generally speaking, that's been okay, you know, to put a lot on him. But if he's not, like last year, then you see they suffer and they're not as good. So point is, they still have a lot of work to do here. Now, there's no doubt about that. And the good news is they do have the 14th overall pick to hopefully, whether it is an O lineman or whether, a corner, an edge rusher
Some
falls
people
in
have
there.
them mocking a tight end.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to draft a tight end. I just, yeah,
I don't see
I don't
that.
know how early, right? I mean, for one thing, look at their history. They drafted Hayden Hurst, and then they drafted Mark Andrews after the fact. They drafted Ed Dixon, and then they drafted Dennis Pitta after the fact. Historically, it's been the second swing that they take in a draft where Charlie Kohler and then Isaiah Likely. Kohler was good, but Likely was the more of an impact guy. So I think they're going to draft a tight end, but I think that'll be more of a late day two or day three thing, because to me, that's a position where they've proven capable of drafting some impact players. It doesn't even necessarily have to be early. I mean, Todd Heap and Hayden Hurst were first round picks, but they've drafted some really good tight ends in the third round, the fourth round. So that's where you're hoping, because that is a need, but not necessarily your most pressing need, that's where you're hoping you can take a swing and connect later in the draft, because they certainly need to add another tight end. I mean, they added a Durham Smythe, to go, he'll be the Charlie Kohler replacement, and I think he's a good blocking tight end, but they need another pass catcher, because I do share your sentiment as far as some concern about what exactly is Mark Andrews at this point in time. I mean, not to say he can't be productive and be a good player, but I don't know if you can suddenly view him as thinking he's going to be the guy he was 4 or 5 years ago statistically, because he hasn't been that at the very least over the last year or two.
Yeah, yesterday was a long time ago. It is still football season around here, although we're talking baseball, birds in Chicago, and of course, I headed back home. On Friday, we will be at Fadley's at Lexington Market. I keep saying that. I'm going to get over to the fishmonger's daughter. The second it's open in Catonsville, we'll be over there. They'll be serving the world-famous Fadley's crab cakes right in Catonsville, right near the airport. You ship them out. And but we'll be down at Lexington Market on Friday. The Giants are in town. We will be at Costas in Timonium next Thursday, the 16th. And then the 23rd, we move to Coco's Pub. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have the fresh scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. I have a handful of these Harlem Globetrotters, still a lucky batch, but we'll have the Maryland Treasures on Friday. Also, our friends at GBMC, keeping me healthy and alive, and I have my my big checkup later on in the month. And of course, Farnan and Dermer, they check up your HVAC as well as your plumbing. They are the comfort guys. We are glad to have them on our team. Zach joined us last week, talked a little baseball, and then came by and helped me with a serious plumbing thing going on here last week. So if you need a plumber, you got one. They are the comfort guys at Farnan and Dermer. He is Luke. I am Nestor. A little baseball, a little football, and we're going to dive into the politics as we have the election coming up on June 23rd here in Baltimore County. We'll have a lot of political hopefuls, a lot of conversations about the state of democracy and war in America, as I've just gotten back from South America. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore positive. Stay with us.